Z-Info.
What's that? Oh my God!
Every spring is a spring.
It's springtime in Vermont, a time when a young man's or young woman's fancy turns to youth.
To youth.
Well, why not? After all, spring is all about renewal, rebirth, and regeneration, or so says a line in a popular Hallmark greeting card. It would seem, however, that no one in the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble's Department of Programming got the memo, because the median age of the composers on today's menu is 77 and a half. That's a lot of Social Security kickbacks, AARP memberships, and denture adhesives. Whatever happened...
You lost your place.
I was
talking about AARP memberships.
What?
Yes, there.
Whatever happened to the old adage, live fast, die young? Henry Purcell sure practiced it. He kicked the bucket when he was only 36. Mozart was 35, and Gershwin was 38 when they bought their one-way tickets to oblivion. The curtain abruptly fell on Bizet when he was 37.
Not too soon.
Right. Both Chopin and von Weber had barely grazed the 39-year mark when their final chords sounded. Franz Schubert left at least one symphony unfinished at the age of 31, and Pergolesi, the composer, not the venerated pergola inventor, checked out before he could see 27 candles embellish his tubercular birthday cake. How very timely.
Yes.
At the opposite end of the spectrum is a veritable parade of geezers who have contributed to tonight's concert fair.
Or this afternoon's. There's a time issue again.
Is it tonight now?
It's not tonight
yet. Is it not
yet.
Dark?
It's dark in here.
I see. Leading the pack is Elliot Carter,
yes,
half a year shy of his 102nd birthday. Registering a mere 61 on the Antiquometer is Dennis Bathory Kitts, the group's relative crumb snatcher.
I snatch!
There, snatch that one. So it would seem that these two, plus the pair of hardy septuagenarians whose tunes make up the rest of the program, prefer the stayin' alive philosophy.
I do.
And why not? These days, the longer a composer can treat his audience to so-called acoustical events, the longer she can collect imaginary royalties from ASCAP or BMI.
I got mine.
Or Goldman Sachs.
Last week? No, none of those. I got my royalties from ASCAP. I bought dinner.
Don't rub it in. Or any of 100 other organizations that were created to, among other things, disregard a tunesmith's pecuniary needs. Which is a shame, really, because these days most composers do need their pecuniaries. Speaking of longevity, which I was about to do, the combined age of tonight's four composers is 310. Coincidentally, the year the Romans under Constantine defeated the Franks. Attentive listeners will hear more than one allusion to that blood-spattered battle at various times during the musical siege that will soon follow. And if the more bellicose among you feel compelled to join in the tumult, the management of this establishment implores you to temper that urge till the post concert reception, where a good, clean food fight is always welcome.
And there is a reception at the end, which we must encourage you to come to, because I think it was left out of the program. But please come. There's food.
To be thrown.
And fight with us.
Likewise, welcome is tonight's first contestant, who we will introduce as soon as we present our own credentials, Calvos and Damien, at least one of whom has a tune on the concert that anagrammatizes into Acme Termite Wad. And what are we supposed to take away from that?
Hopefully the termites, because they'll get to the food first, and I would like that. Maybe we'll have only the Acme Wad left.
Maybe we will find out later then. Meantime, for us to retreat to the semi-obscurity of the side of the stage, an area that we euphemistically call...
In the house.
Near enough to the action to call the play-by-play if need be, but far enough away to not suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortissimos.
Joining us right now will be the director of the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble, Stephen Klimowski,
himself not a crumb snatcher.
Who is, well, no, he's, but he's, He's got darker hair than me, so it's very depressing. Who will join us to say some certainly very important words? I know they're important because they're written in bigger type than these.
So they must be, indeed. First of all, thank you so much for coming. I haven't had the opportunity to speak with you, our audience, all season because we've been blessed with Calvis and Damien, which has been a wonderful thing.
He can say that now because we're not doing it anymore.
Well, they might do it. But that's what I wanted to talk to you about, and that is that next year we are going to experiment with different types of presentation. This Calvis and Damien, this train wreck over here, right, was one of our experiments, and we will probably continue to some degree with that. But we are going to do some experimenting, and that's where I want to get your feedback. What works? What doesn't work? There's the standard, our standard, what we've done, our pre-concert talk, which has they loved it, which was before the concert, and then you would get a standard clap, walk out, clap, play, clap, walk back type of event. And I think that has its merit. Next year, our Burlington concerts will all be in the Flynn space. That gives us the added advantage of theater lighting. So we plan on taking full advantage of the theater lighting.
We're learning to turn it off and on.
Yes. And we may even go farther than that.
Yes, exploding lights.
Who knows? We will be experimenting with perhaps some poetry, perhaps not even telling you what you're about to hear, but hearing it and just getting your reaction. These are just ideas. But I would like ideas from you. What have you seen that's worked? What have you seen that we do that you like? What have you seen that we do that you really don't like? What doesn't work? The point is, we want the music to come across. We want it to come across in the most powerful way. So that's what I came to talk to you about and to ask. So please, if you go on our website, vcme.org, and click on my name on the homepage, you can shoot an email to me and just give me any ideas that you might have. Again, likes or dislikes. I got a couple from the Montpelier audience on Friday, which I really appreciate. So,
and they didn't come back.
No, they didn't come back tonight. No, I'm afraid they didn't. At least
okay.
Not yet.
Yes.
So, anyways, thank you guys for the season. They've been just terrific, and I appreciate it.
That and $1.25 gets us a cup of coffee.
Not anymore. $1.99. Oh. Yes. First piece on the program, Alan Brings. It's interesting because I was reading something about him today. And he makes a point that he says, in a century which has seen bewildering changes in musical fashions, composers have often discarded as unworthy works composed early in their careers. Although I have sometimes chastised them by revising and rewriting them, I have never cast off any of my offspring, and perhaps none of them was ever written to follow a current fashion. All of them seem to be, to me, as fresh today as anything I have just written. Now, although the piece on the program is not an old one, it occurs to me that the whole question of fashion comes up on a lot of the pieces in the concert today. A question of whether or not what is being done can speak to audiences across time. And the first piece on the program speaks, in a sense, with itself. It's a duet. It's called Duologue, not what it says in the program, Duologue, so it's not kind of dour, but rather a conversation. And you have the opportunity to eavesdrop on this conversation. I like this idea very much, because unlike a chamber work of more parts in which it's clearly something being presented, here we have an interchange. It's not a lecture by one soloist. It's not a group, which gives you no opportunity to hear this conversation. Instead, it's really quite direct and quite magical to kind of, as the audience, listen in on what's going on.
Think of yourself as Homeland Security agents.
Yes. Do a lock.
Shall we do it?
Do it.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, bring them back. Here they are.
The more often I hear that piece, the more it makes sense. So I would encourage all you to come to tonight's show.
Is there a repeat tonight? But they're here already.
Never mind.
Okay. Next piece on the program, the Elliot Carter piece, is a masterpiece. It is, first of all, its edginess is not lost over time, but its angularity in terms of listening disappears. We have lived now 60 years since this piece was written. Modernist era, a period of time when people listening were significantly unprepared for the sounds they were hearing. We talk about, as Alan Brings mentions, the way in which we sometimes, as composers, don't pay attention to style. And Carter was certainly one of those. He defined styles. He invented them. He created them. He made them new. And so we hear this piece from 60 years ago now with performers fully capable of bringing musicality to it in ways that were difficult in the days it was written. Any piece that is new is especially difficult for a performer because they have few cues on which to base their understanding of the piece. They may know the composer, that will help. They may have played pieces in other styles, that will help. But if they're the first to play something, they have to set a kind of a personal standard of how the piece sounds. Now here we have periods of styles gone by, rolled by since this piece was created. And so that, as I mentioned, that angularity that was once present to the ears of 1948, in your ears of 2010, will probably be absent. Chances are none of you were adults when this piece was first presented. You may have been teenagers, but certainly not likely mature classical music listeners. And here we have this piece in which four movements slowly develop. They bring to bear amazingly complicated conversation and at the same time a kind of a broad beauty which is apparent now in ways that it could not have been apparent a couple of generations ago. And the particular performance you'll hear tonight is absolutely up to the standard of the composition itself. It is a miraculous performance you're about to hear.
Also, don't forget to listen to the subset that both Elliot Carter and Jimmy Carter were identical twins, and you'll hear some of that interplay during their class. A lot of people don't know that, but it's true.
It's true. Are they coming?
They're not coming.
They're not coming out yet.
I guess they're not prepared.
Yes, they're still learning the piece. Actually, there's a piano out back there that sounds like a cage-prepared piano that where they were kind of using earlier. It almost sounds like people have thrown marbles into it. I heard Liz playing on this piano in the back, and it was astounding. It was really this fuzzy thing. It sounded like there were critters inside as she was playing it.
Lovely.
So,
What else is new?
Well, I don't know. Here they are! Yes! Oh, you're setting up now. Okay.
This is dead air, Bonnie.
I'll just mention a little, as they're working on that, a little bit more about this piece. It is also full of surprises. It builds up sets of expectations, and we all have expectations. I mean, there's an old anecdote, perhaps apocryphal, when Beethoven was sleeping, one of his associates came in and played a chord progression and ended on a dominant seventh chord and then left. And supposedly Beethoven came down and resolved that chord to the root. Likewise, we all have, you know, sort of musical expectations. And even if it's an atonal piece or a complicated piece, we are led along by the composer. The composer deals in your expectations, musical expectations, and personal ones. And in this piece, all four movements build those expectations. You learn the piece as it develops. And by the time you get to the last few measures of it, you think you know what's going to happen. And then Carter, in his brilliance as a composer, provides the perfect ending. And that ending is never the ending that you have anticipated. And that's part of his genius as a composer throughout his entire, well, almost 102 years, 80-some of them composing. So, all right, we'll let them tune, and the marvelous sonata for cello and piano from 1948 by Elliot Carter. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll have a short intermission while the musicians get their massages, and we'll be back here. You're listening to Calvus and Damien
in the house
on the Non-Pop International Network.